When I was studying at VST, the United Church students and the Anglican students had a slightly different track. The United Church students would have 4 years at VST, where the Anglicans would have three. And what would normally happen is that after the second year, the United Church students would go out and do a placement for a year in some church, usually somewhere else in Canada, whereas the Anglicans would do 3 years in a row, and then we would get what we call our curacy for 2 years. So that's slightly different. Now, the reason why I mention that is that there, my first year, one of the United Church students came back from his placement and did kind of a workshop of like what he went through in that year, and they were always very interesting. So I went to it, and he was going through various things of what he did, and then he said, "And now I would like to talk about the horror of weddings." And we were all kind of taken back, as aren't weddings really wonderful things? Well, he did have one or two horror stories about weddings, and they can be somewhat fraught with emotions. And it's, for example, the wedding service itself is something I actually look forward to and really quite love. The liturgy is beautiful. Two people are getting married. It's an honor to marry two people. The wedding rehearsals are something different, though. Quite often, it's when the extended families meet for the first time, and there's always kind of family whatever. Quite often, people getting married are quite young, and so the bridesmaids and the best men can be young and kind of silly and all that sort of thing. So it can be, I remember one actually wedding at a cathedral that I was doing. The bride came up to me and said, "My father might come. If he does, he's to be turned away at the door." And as she was walking away, she said, "He also might have a gun." Yes, okay. Well, he did show up. He didn't have a gun, thank goodness. And after a long heart-to-heart conversation, he actually ended up walking her down the aisle. However, that weddings can be sort of fraught with that kind of emotion. And in the gospel today, Jesus uses a wedding in the parable. And weddings at the time of Jesus were no less fraught with emotion. In fact, arguably, you could say they were even more. Here's what would happen. The groom would go to the bride's house, as it does in the parable, and then there would be a torchlight parade, thus the lamps that they were talking about, a torchlight parade to the groom's house, where they would have the ceremony. And then the celebration would actually last for 2 or 3 days. It would actually go on for days. So we're talking a big, a big event. But in this parable, when the groom inexplicably is very late, he finally comes, and there's 5 bridesmaids. 5 of them have oil, and 5 ran out. And they ask to borrow some from the 5 who have it. They say, no, you can't have our oil. So they have to go out and look for it. And by the time they find it and come back, the gates are closed and they can't join the wedding. It's a relatively easy parable to understand in the sense that the early Christians, at the time that this was put to pen, were concerned about the fact that Jesus wasn't coming back as soon as they thought he was. He promised, in some gospels we read, promised to come back before people would die off. Well, people were dying off, and it was a generation later, and people were trying to explain or trying to think about how this can be. Why isn't Jesus coming back? So this parable explains, in a sense, what do you do in the meantime? And what you do in the meantime is that you live with hope. You live with expectation. You hope that the God who created the world, who started this wonderful process, will, with love, continue creating the world, and with our help, perhaps bring heaven here on earth, and then the process perhaps could be completed. So our hope is our future world. and for small things in daily life, the large and the small. But hoping, of course, doesn't mean that reality cannot be harsh. Of course it can be. We have instances of injustice, instances of poverty. As we were saying at the beginning of here, homelessness is up 30% year over year. There's a lot of injustice in our world, a lot of inequity, a lot of violence, a lot of evil. But we do still live in hope. Our task is to, in a sense, hold enough oil, hold enough hope to see us through. And Jesus is, of course, our hope. Jesus comes to us when we do the work of compassion, when we do the work of forgiveness, when we do the work of justice. Jesus comes to us when our loved ones are sick and when we and they need comfort. Jesus comes to us when we never give up on something important or something that is good. Jesus comes to us in the darkest of times, and that light can always be made through the crevices of life. And Jesus comes to us at the times when humanity itself fails, for example, in times of war, which we remember today. I have a story for you from my great-grandfather in World War I, and it's a story that I've actually heard a number of times from a number of different sources, and so I always wondered, well, was he actually telling a true story, or was it something that was kind of made up, or anyway? What I decided was, is a story that probably happened numerous times, particularly in that war of trench warfare. Anyway, this is his story. So he was out in no man's land and got severely wounded in the leg. Indeed, his leg had to be amputated after that. But there he was. He was severely wounded and couldn't go back with everyone else, and so he was out there alone. Leaning against a tree, and a single German soldier came by and saw him and pointed the gun at him. And he put his hands up. And obviously the German soldier wasn't going to take him hostage. He could see that he would have to pick him up, and literally his wound was too severe. There's no way he could walk, so the thing would be to shoot him. But the German soldier stood there for a minute or two, and then put his gun down and sat down beside my grandfather. Now, my grandfather didn't speak a word of German, and this German didn't speak a word of English, but through nonverbal communication, they shared pictures of each other's family. They shared some water and some rations, and then the German soldier went away and left my great-grandfather there. And he was, of course, later picked up. And as I said, he spent the rest of his life with one leg. Now, all soldiers, every single one that I have ever met, every single one that I've heard of, hold on to the hope that we were talking about. They hold on to the lamp, the light, that says that their battle will be the last one ever fought. No soldier ever wants to go into war, but when they do, they pray that theirs will be the last ever fought. They do not want their children to fight in war. They do not want their ancestors to fight in wars. And so today we remember the fallen. We remember the wounded of body, mind, and spirit. And we remember them in totality, and we remember them by name. It is hugely important, I believe, to remember their sacrifice. But as we do, we also remember. We also remember their hope, that their sacrifice was not in vain, that their sacrifice was for a better world, a world of lasting peace. And so finally, we hope that God will fulfill her project on earth and bring lasting peace. We hope that God will fulfill his project and bring love to, from, and for all people, and forever and always. Amen.